News of the Times. Murderous Mondays. The Case of Madame Bessarabo. Welcome to News of the Times. In today's episode, it is 1920s Paris, where a chauffeur expecting his wealthy employer to arrive finds that his employer has gone missing. His employer has shared details of his dramatic private life about his wife more than once. The report by the chauffeur lead the police to a trunk left at the luggage department of Nancy, where the naked body of Monsieur Bessarabo trussed at his hands and feet is found. From here, the police trace their prime suspect, the forcible and dramatic Madame Bessarabo and her daughter. A series of explanations regarding his death, including underworld spies and dramatic crimes of passion, ensue, creating a rich tableau of stories that captivate the press and the public. The evidence that Madame Bessarabo's forays on the stock exchange have been highly damaging financially, whereas her now deceased husband was quite rich, adds to the drama. We take a look at the crime, the capture, and the remarkable stories associated with the death of Monsieur Bessarabo in today's episode of Murderous Mondays. We hope you enjoy the show. Madame Bessarabo, or Hera Mertel. Marie-Louise Grouge was a woman with a flair for the dramatic and sense of adventure. She moved to Mexico in 1892, and here she met and married Monsieur Pierre Paul Jacques, and had two daughters. Marie-Louise had literary aspirations, writing prolifically under the pen name of Hera Mertel. The couple, with their daughter, moved to Paris in 1911. A place far more conducive to the literary circles that Marie-Louise wished to engage in. The first death. In Paris, the first tragedy struck Marie-Louise with the apparent suicide of her husband, Monsieur Jacques. At his desk, with a gun by his side and the gunshot through the right temple, he had written a note stating that he was committing suicide. Bereft, his wife Marie-Louise Jacques confirmed that her husband had sadly been having severe financial issues, which may have been why he had committed suicide. Police were not completely convinced, but without any proof of anything more nefarious having transpired, they were unable to pursue. The widow, Madame Jacques, or Hera Mertel, as she liked to be recognised, pack up their things and move back to Mexico. The sale of her husband's estate nets Madame Jacques, or Hera Mertel, a considerable sum. Husband too. It doesn't take long for Hera to meet wealthy Jacob Weissman, who becomes a naturalised French citizen and goes under the name of Georges Bessarabo. The new blended family pack their things and travel back to Paris, where Hera Mertel, the new Madame Bessarabo, once again involves herself in the Paris literary set. The marriage, which was known to be stormy in Mexico, becomes even more so in Paris. Bessarabo, a known philanderer, lacks indiscretion in his outside activities, leaving Madame Bessarabo quite aware of his continued infidelities. Madame Bessarabo equally is known to have affairs and carry on a bohemian lifestyle with her pseudo-literary set. More importantly, there is some rumour that Bessarabo may dump his wife, which would leave her financially stranded and publicly humiliated. The crime. The story that grips the public takes place in July 1920, with a report from the chauffeur to the police regarding the unexplained disappearance of his employer, Monsieur Bessarabo, who he knew would be depositing a large sum of money. From the Newcastle Journal, the 5th of August, 1920, another trunk murder, disappearance of rich Paris merchant, Morning Post and Newcastle Daily. On Monday morning, the chauffeur in the service of a wealthy Paris merchant named Bessarabo informed the police that his employer, who had placed 200,000 francs in a bank on Friday, had failed to appear at a rendezvous he had made for Saturday morning, and he had not been seen since. He added that Madame Bessarabo on Saturday morning surprised him by stating that her husband had gone away till Monday, subsequently refusing his services and taking a taxicab in which she and her daughter left for the station, carrying with them a large and heavy trunk. Chauffeur's story. The chauffeur explained to the police that Bessarabo and his wife were on very bad terms, and that a few weeks ago his wife and stepdaughter had tried to strangle him. He was afraid something had happened to his employer. Inquiries made by the police showed that Madame Bessarabo and her daughter had left Paris for a villa in the suburb of Montmorency. Madame Bessarabo informed the police that her husband had been obliged to go away on business and that she had accompanied him on Friday afternoon to the Gare du Nord. Later in the day, at his request, she had taken a large trunk containing several compromising papers and dispatched them to Nancy from the Gare d'Est. Discovery of the trunk. Telegrams were sent by the police to Nancy, where a trunk was found lying unclaimed at the station. On being opened, it was found to contain the body of a man, since identified as Bessarabo, who appears to have been strangled. Madame Bessarabo denied all knowledge of the crime and suggested that her husband might have been assassinated after they had parted at the Gare du Nord. According to further statements made by the woman, the dead man, a naturalized Frenchman, was of Romanian birth and originally bore the name of Weissman. It is alleged that he had squandered 700 to 800,000 francs of her marriage portion and had been systematically unfaithful to her. Both Madame Bessarabo and her daughter have been arrested. Madame Bessarabo is prolific in her various statements and explanations of how her husband's body could possibly have ended up in a trunk in the Nancy station luggage department. Stories of his having been a secret spy with incriminating documents is just one of the fantastic stories woven, appropriately, by a fiction writer. As the story of his having been a secret spy with incriminating documents implying that he had been murdered by counter-spies does not hold, Madame Bessarabo uses the French crime of passion explanation, stating that she had seen her husband with a letter from another, and in a fit of jealousy and passion had killed him. The trunk and burning of his clothes were an attempt to hide the crime. However, evidence emerges that Madame Bessarabo, even with the money collected from the death of her first husband and generated from her writing as Hera Mertel, was in a financial predicament. Her stock exchange forays had been unsuccessful, and she was dangerously low of funds. There was also some rumour that her wealthy husband had informed her that no help would be forthcoming to help her out of her financial predicament. From the Lancashire Evening Post, the 7th of August 1920, alleged confession of French novelist. What little mystery still attached to the disappearance of Bessarabo from his Paris home a week ago and the discovery of his body in a trunk at a station at Nancy has now been removed by the confessions of his wife and stepdaughter. Nevertheless, by reason of the social standing of the principals and the speed wherewith the guilt has been traced home in these days when so many crimes go undetected by the French police, the press devoted columns to the story. Madame Bessarabo, who is 46 years of age and the author of several novels, poems and review articles, has told the police that she married her second husband in Mexico. He was originally a Romanian named Weissman, but he changed his name on becoming a naturalized Frenchman. They returned to Europe 2 years ago and settled in Paris. By reason of the liaisons the husband contracted and the wife's temperament, which she described as no less jealous than violent, their life in Paris was a stormy one. When the husband arrived home late on Friday night and went to bed, his wife began upbraiding him with his infidelities. In an excess of rage, he seized her by the throat, whereupon she wrenched herself free, snatched a revolver lying on a chair nearby, and shot the man dead. The daughter, awakened by the noise, ran to the door of the room but was told not to enter, and reassured by some excuse, returned to bed. In the morning, the daughter was told to fetch a trunk from the attic and on returning found Bessarabo's body already tied up in a bundle and helped her mother to put it into the trunk. The two women then went to the station and dispatched it to Nancy. Afterwards, they set out for the Villa Montmorency, stopping on the way at Enghien, where they hired a boat and dropped the revolver into the lake. The blood-stained pillow and sheets they burned. There seems to have been no motive for choosing Nancy as the destination of the trunk, nor does the murderer appear to have made any attempt to disguise her whereabouts after the crime. Though she apparently had the idea of going abroad, had it not been for the chauffeur who acted so quickly on his suspicions, she might perhaps have escaped. The victim, who made and spent money equally fast, recently made a fortune by speculation. Further sensational facts have come to light with the extraordinary trunk murder. It would appear that the reason Madame Bessarabo's crime was possibly not jealousy, as she asserted, but financial interest, and the murder was premeditated. It is now alleged that she had 8 days previously made certain compromising statements to friends expressing her hatred of her husband and wishing him dead. Further, she accused him of having spent her entire fortune on other women. It also transpires that she had recently been gambling heavily on the stock exchange and losing large sums of money and was in exceptional financial difficulty, whereas her husband's finances were excellent. Inquiries were also to be made concerning the death of her first husband, Monsieur Jacques, in 1914. He too died by a bullet and was discovered with a letter confessing suicide, which is now considered a possible forgery. The death brought Madame an inheritance of nearly £40,000, worth approximately £5.5 million in 2024. It has further been discovered that some weeks ago she booked a passage to South America for herself and her daughter. There seems no question that Madame Bessarabo herself is implicated in the death of her husband, and that the murder was pre-planned with the tickets bought for a trip to Mexico for herself and her daughter. But the question remains regarding the part her daughter played in his murder. From the Liverpool Daily Post, the 11th of August 1920, victim's stepdaughter under suspicion. A second reconstruction of the drama in the Square La Bruyere flat where Monsieur Bessarabo was shot by his wife is to be carried out in a day or two. The object is to see whether the man's stepdaughter, Paula Jacques, will give an account of the scene that tallies with her mother's story. It is considered by no means certain that the girl had little to do with the affair, as was at first reported. A friend of Bessarabo states that his stepdaughter hated him because he prevented her marriage to a young man in Mexico. The girl is said to have remarked once that death was the right punishment for conjugal infidelity. She also said, "France is very behind in these things. In Mexico, people use revolvers for far less serious offences than infidelity." As the trial date approaches, the two women who are in jail but kept separate from each other, Madame Bessarabo begins to panic and change her story once again. From the Dundee Courier on the 3rd of March 1921, the Paris trunk mystery endangered life for daughter's sake. Madame Bessarabo, who is accused of having murdered her husband, placing his body in a trunk, which she afterwards sent to Nancy in France, is a writer who, under the name of Hera Mertel, has produced a number of sensational stories. Immediately after the body of her husband had been found at Nancy, Madame Bessarabo admitted that she had shot him early one morning, had placed his body in a trunk, and had sent the trunk off by rail. On Tuesday, however, she declared to the examining magistrate that this story was nothing but a fabrication to protect her daughter, whom she was afraid would be accused of the crime. She now states that on the morning of July the 31st, she was at Gare de Est with her husband, who intended to go to Nancy. He told her he had forgotten a number of things in the house, and taking a taxi, returned to fetch them. When the taxi returned, Monsieur Bessarabo was not there, but the chauffeur handed her a note directing her to forward the trunk which had arrived in the taxi to Nancy. Books on strategy. Madame Bessarabo then proceeded to cast the gravest doubts on the patriotic loyalty of her husband, declaring that in the trunk he generally kept books on strategy, plans of giant bombing planes, and mysterious tubes. This curious collection disquieted her to such an extent that she inquired of her husband its meaning. The latter reassured her, but as he was born in Vienna and spoke German better than French, she remained suspicious. Madame Bessarabo stated that she implored her husband to hand over these plans to the Ministry of War, but he refused, charging her to keep the matter secret. Accused concluded her declarations by an appeal to sentiment, asserting that for her daughter's sake she had placed her own life in danger. The French press is much diverted by this highly coloured story, one journal asking if Hera Mertel intends to sell the book and cinema rights of her new serial. The case goes to trial and is a sensation in its day. It is what all of Paris is talking about. Madame Bessarabo has obtained the very best legal defence that money can buy, the famous Maître Moreau de Giaferi of serial killer Landru fame. The trial, part crime, part high drama, has at its centre the wildly unpredictable Madame Bessarabo, who seems to bask in the limelight, often interrupting witnesses and screeching unintelligible explanations at the time the trial was considered pure entertainment. The trial begins by laying the groundwork with the history of Madame Bessarabo. From the Pall Mall Gazette, the 8th of June, 1922, Husband's Body in Trunk, Latest French Crime Sensation, Gruesome Story, Two Women Placed on Trial. Today sees the opening of the trial of Madame Bessarabo and her daughter, who are accused of the murder of Madame Bessarabo's husband, Monsieur Jacques Weissman, a Romanian, who became a naturalized French citizen under the name of Georges Bessarabo. Mademoiselle Paul Jacques, the 24-year-old daughter of Madame Bessarabo, is her child by her first marriage with Monsieur Jacques, a silk merchant who she married in Mexico. The crime of which the two women are accused was first heard on August 2nd, 1920, when information was given to the police by Monsieur Bessarabo's chauffeur to the effect that he had not seen his employer since the evening of July 30th and feared that some accident had befallen him. Monsieur Bessarabo was a man of some means and was concerned in the sale of Mexican oil. A heavy trunk. The police visited his apartment at 3 Square La Bruyere, where they learned that Madame Bessarabo and her daughter had left for their country house at Montmorency, taking with them a heavy trunk. The police afterwards found that this trunk had been dispatched to Nancy. Their suspicions were aroused, and two inspectors were sent to Nancy to ascertain its content. Their discovery of the body of Monsieur Bessarabo in the trunk provided one of the greatest sensations in the history of crime in France. The first story. Previously, Madame Bessarabo had maintained that she had sent the trunk to Nancy at the request of her husband, who was anxious to rid himself of compromising documents, showing that he had been engaged in espionage. But after the contents of the trunk had been revealed, she admitted that on the night of July the 30th and 31st, she and her husband had quarrelled on account of attentions which she suspected him of paying to other women. After her husband had struck her, she picked up a revolver in self-defence and shot him. Early in the morning, she packed the body in the trunk and then drove with her daughter to various railway stations, finally deciding to dispatch the gruesome luggage to Nancy. She denied that her daughter knew of the murder or what the trunk contained. Daughter contradicts. The daughter, on the other hand, contradicted her mother. She declared that she heard the shot and later helped her mother to put the body in the trunk. These two accounts were those first given by the mother and daughter. Both have since furnished many different versions, which are worthy of Madame Bessarabo's talents as a writer of sensational stories under the name of Hera Mertel. One of these accounts is to the effect that Monsieur Bessarabo went with them to the Gare de Est, later leaving them and driving off in a taxi with the trunk, after which they never saw him again. On another occasion, Madame Bessarabo affirmed that he was not dead, but he was in New York. In the face of all these contradictory versions, the task of the examining magistrate, the late Monsieur Bonin, who conducted the case against Landru, was not an easy one. The affair is further complicated by accusations of forgery brought against the two women. A complication. The motive for the alleged crime would appear to have been not jealousy, but a desire to obtain possession of a sum of 600,000 francs, which was due to Monsieur Bessarabo on the last day of July. For our listeners, that equates to approximately £36 million in 2024. A typewritten document found in the house in the square in La Bruyere gives Madame Bessarabo power of attorney to draw the money, and experts have identified the signature, Georges Bessarabo, as being in the handwriting of Mademoiselle Jacques, who admitted that she typed the document at her mother's dictation, but was reluctant to explain the presence of a number of attempts to imitate Monsieur Bessarabo's signature, which were found by the police in the waste paper basket. First husband's fate. Madame Bessarabo was born at Lyon in 1868. In 1895, she went to Mexico, where she married Monsieur Paul Jacques, a man 20 years older than herself. In 1900, Monsieur Jacques, who had amassed a comfortable fortune, returned to France at his wife's request. On May the 5th, 1914, he was found dead at his desk with a revolver by his side, shot through the head. The authorities concluded that it was a case of suicide, but a certain amount of suspicion was directed against his wife, who inherited under his will. Monsieur Bonin reopened the inquiry into this affair, but decided that there was no reason to bring a charge against Madame Bessarabo for the murder of her first husband. The trial is expected to last a week. Such is the fame of the case at the time that the Sunday Post send over their own French-speaking reporter to cover the trial in detail. The British public are equally diverted by the drama that surrounds the case. From the Sunday Post, the 18th of June, 1922. Impressions at Trunk Mystery Trial. Landru's counsel puts up a great fight for Madame Bessarabo and her daughter. The closing stages of the sensational trunk murder in Paris have been characterized by scenes almost akin to those witnessed during the hearing of the notorious Landru case. Madame Bessarabo, a poetess well known in Parisian literary circles, is charged with the murder of her husband, Monsieur Jacques Bessarabo, a merchant, whose body was found in a trunk in the left luggage department at Nancy Station. Mademoiselle Paul Jacques, a daughter by her former marriage, is also in the dock on the grounds of being her mother's accomplice. When I first saw Madame Bessarabo, who is the leading character in the amazing Paris trunk murder, sitting defiantly in the dock, my mental vision pictured her in another setting, that of the woman of deep sentiment, writing poetry full of sweet thoughts and finest imagery. Intensely dramatic proceedings. Somehow, as I scanned the heavy frame and rather hard features of Madame Bessarabo, I could not restrain an involuntary fleeting twinge of pity. But pity is no means the predominant sentiment. The case, even with the traditions of the notorious Landru so recent, is one that will live long in the popular memory of Paris. Bitter animosity against mother and daughter, indignation and frank curiosity as to the outcome of the trial are rampant, and during the past week, interest in the proceedings has risen to fever height. It is now close on 2 years since a tremendous sensation was caused in Paris literary circles by the arrest of Madame Bessarabo for the murder of her husband, whose body was found in a trunk in the left luggage department at Nancy Station. Mademoiselle Paul Jacques, her daughter by her first marriage, was also arrested in the same connection. Famous defending counsel. They are being defended by the most eloquent and persuasive of counsel, Monsieur Di Moro Giafferi, who figured in the same capacity in the Landru trial. Madame Bessarabo is a large, heavily built woman with a pale face furrowed with long, deep wrinkles. The thin, compressed lips give an impression of hardness, which is deepened by her obvious dyed fair hair. In temperament, she is excitable and loquacious, although now and again she has lapsed into a state of sullen moodiness. At other times, her counsel has tried in vain to stem the torrent of her words under the fierce ordeal of accusation to which she was subjected by the president of the court, and her voice, rather husky at best, would become more and more hoarse as she was swamped by her temper and her verbosity. A pathetic little figure. Paul Jacques is a pathetic little figure. Small and inclined to stoutness, she appeared to feel her position more keenly than her mother, and frequently leant back with half-closed eyes and an appearance almost of stupor. She looked dreamily at the ceiling of the dingy court now and again, and an expression of haughty resignation would flicker across her face. Perhaps one of the most dramatic moments during the trial was early in the week when the trunk itself was opened in court. A shiver of repugnance ripped over the audience, and even the most morbidly curious sensed a feeling of revulsion. The jury sat tense and motionless. Even the usher, hardened to disagreeable scenes, showed signs of dread. But his weakness was only temporary. Regaining control of his features, he uttered his stern cry for silence. The cover of the lugubrious trunk fell on the floor with a resounding clatter that jangled on one's nerves. A dull flush mounted to the cheeks of the accused women as they were brought in immediately after. They took their places in the dock with averted eyes, plainly avoiding the gaze of the public. Their life in prison. During the past 2 years, mother and daughter have been imprisoned at Lazare. They were allowed to have a number of things sent in to them from the outside. Madame Hira Mertel, for such was Madame Bessarabo's nom de plume, had the simplest of meals, which were delivered according to her daily order from a tidy little restaurant in the immediate vicinity. Mademoiselle Jacques seemed to enjoy a rather more robust appetite and occasionally drank a little wine with her meals. Mother and daughter were separated from each other, and the authorities took good care to keep them apart. But neither of them was in solitary confinement, for Saint-Lazare not being fitted with cells, community life is the order of the day. Prisoners who have not been tried are not compelled to work, but the hours must seem like centuries to unoccupied trains and idle hands. It is not surprising, therefore, that both women passed their days sewing busily in the workroom amongst scores of other women. Their monotonous task was often brightened little by someone reading aloud. The former woman of letters, no doubt, might have wished that more exciting texts had been chosen, but she was never heard to complain on this score. Whatever her thoughts, she kept them to herself, and to the prison officials they were a closed book. Only on one point did she open her mind, and that was to express her confidence that she and her daughter would be acquitted. Madame Bessarabo's former marriage. Madame Bessarabo, as I have indicated, had been married twice, and she had been asked some very pointed questions regarding the death of her first husband, Monsieur Paul Jacques, who was found one morning in 1914 shot through the head. A verdict of suicide was returned at the time, and the justification of which is now being questioned. She had met Monsieur Jacques in Mexico, and this country was destined to furnish her with her second husband in the person of Monsieur Jacques Weissman, better known as Bessarabo, Romanian merchant who became a naturalized Frenchman. The marriage took place in 1915, and not many months had elapsed before Paul, the elder of Madame's two daughters, took a fierce dislike to her stepfather because he interfered with her sweetheart. The household, I understand, was not a particularly happy one in Mexico, and when the family moved permanently to Paris, matters went from bad to worse, and scenes became a daily occurrence. A crowd of bohemians. Madame was much more interested in higher philosophy, poetry, and sociology than housekeeping. In order to pamper her literary aspirations, she tried to institute a salon, and men who shared her ideas, impecunious poets and rhyme masters, and a crowd of bohemians were welcomed at her house. While she went her way, the husband went his. Seeking consolation elsewhere, he soon gave rise to jealousy on the part of his wife. Madame Bessarabo was championed by her daughter Paul, who said to her stepfather one day, "If my husband deceived me, I should let him see how they play with pistols in Mexico." Then came the terrible tragedy in the end of July 1920. One day the merchant left his office as usual, having made preparations to bring off a large business transaction involving several million francs. But next morning he did not put in an appearance. His wife came instead at about 10 o'clock and said that her husband had gone to see some capitalists. On the following morning she returned to the office and made herself exceptionally pleasant to the staff, who, however, thought that her demeanour was strange, although she was labouring under some strong excitement. The afternoon she again presented herself and showed to the secretary a letter purporting to have been written to her from her husband concerning a trunk at Nancy Station. On this occasion she burst into a tirade against Monsieur Bessarabo, calling him a bandit and a spy. The chauffeur's alarm. The chauffeur, who was alarmed at his master's non-appearance, reported the matter to the police. "The master has disappeared," he said. He was a man who went in terror of his wife and his stepdaughter, and he was always afraid that he would be poisoned. "I'm sure something has happened to him." The police then begin to make investigations and, amongst other things, discover that the mother and daughter had left the house on the day with a very heavy trunk, which they were ostensibly conveying to their country house. Acting on this information, a police officer visited Madame Bessarabo, who stated that it was being sent on to her husband in Nancy under another name. The trunk, on being opened at Nancy, was found to contain a shapeless mass wrapped in waterproof cloth with leather lining, which proved to be a corpse. The limbs were bound together with strips of flannel and a pair of straps. Possessed of this information, the police immediately proceeded to take Madame Bessarabo and her daughter into custody. As the case has worn on the central figure in this strange trial and has continued to interpose in some cases promptly and very flatly disputing the statements of various witnesses, but the interruptions which perhaps caused more of a stir than at any was when Madame Bessarabo suddenly rose from her seat and declared in an impassioned tone of voice, "Gentlemen of the jury, no one knows my secret, but I will reveal it to you before the end of the trial." Her lawyer's great fight. The fact that Madame Bessarabo had not always adhered to one story, and also the fact that her daughter at one point of the trial displayed a stubborn silence, have necessarily made the defence difficult. Further, the repeated outbursts in court of Madame Bessarabo contradicting statements by witnesses have built up a stupendous task for her able lawyer, Maître Moro di Ghiaferi. This man of impassioned oratory and wonderful personal magnetism is reputed to be the greatest criminal lawyer in France. He has an amazing knack of seizing upon the smallest point and developing it to the utmost advantage of his client. And so, in this great human drama, with the lives of two women hanging in the balance, he is straining his ability to the last degree. Through the incredible efforts of their defence team, Madame Bessarabo avoids the death penalty and is sentenced to 20 years. Her daughter is acquitted. From the Scotsman, the 22nd of June 1922, end of French trunk murder trial. Madame Bessarabo sentenced to 20 years penal servitude. Her daughter acquitted. At the hearing of the trunk murder trial today, Madame Bessarabo's daughter, Paul Jacques, at last broke the long and persistent silence she has hitherto maintained. She declared that she heard a shot on the morning of July 31st and saw the dead body of her stepfather, Weissman / Bessarabo. She asked her mother, "What have you done?" And her mother replied, "Either he or I had to go." Paul added that she wanted to inform the police, but her mother prevented her and sent her to fetch a trunk instead. This statement, which placed her mother's guilt beyond doubt, was made in reply to the presiding judge, who asked her whether she had anything to add to today's speech by her counsel. She sobbed bitterly as she related the events incriminating her mother. The jury found Madame Bessarabo guilty with premeditation, but with extenuating circumstances, and they found her daughter not guilty. After her daughter's confession, Madame Bessarabo rose and poured out an incomprehensible torrent of words, endeavouring to show that the body found in the trunk was not that of Monsieur Weissman. The sitting was suspended for a time at the request of Maître Moro Ghiaferi to enable Madame Bessarabo to recover her calm. 4:30 p.m. Madame Bessarabo has been found guilty and has been sentenced to 20 years penal servitude. Her daughter, Mademoiselle Paul Jacques, has been acquitted. Paul's admissions. Although Paul did not state whether she helped to place the body in the trunk, she admitted accompanying her mother to the station and also forging the letter signed Weissman, instructing the chauffeur to take it to the station. Madame Bessarabo implored the jury to spare her daughter. "Punish the elder woman," she said. "She is guilty because she is old. This child is afraid, and I am not afraid, but I did not commit the murder. Mademoiselle Paul Jacques, on learning the verdict of her mother and her own acquittal, burst into tears and had to be led out. After the verdict was read, Madame's first words were, "Thank you, gentlemen of the jury, for having acquitted my daughter. As for me, I'm innocent." She received the sentence of 20 years hard labour quite calmly. Postscript. Questions continued regarding the death of her first husband, Monsieur Jacques, but no real further investigations were taken. Similar to the death of her first husband, had Monsieur Bessarabo's death remained unsolved, Madame Bessarabo would have come into possession of a considerable sum from his estate, just as she had with her first husband. Madame Bessarabo's sentence involved hard labour. She died in prison in 1931. That concludes this episode of Murderous Mondays, the case of Madame Bessarabo. We hope you enjoyed the show. If you did enjoy this show, we would be grateful if you could like or subscribe to our channel. We upload 5 days a week. Mondays are murderous as we delve into the dark side of Regency and Victorian crime. Wednesdays are wicked, where we pull together stories with a similar theme, such as Doctors of Death. Fridays are frightful, where we look at crimes in a location, such as stories from the stage to murder and scandal in the aristocracy. Saturdays is Serial Killer Saturdays, where we investigate serial killer stories from the past. And Sundays is a bit of fun, with a unique mini-murder mystery where you, the listener, have a chance to solve a murderous riddle. On the last Sunday of the month, we offer a 2-hour compilation of stories based around a theme. If you like this channel, you may be interested in our sister channel, Chronicle of the Times, where we offer a lighter side of Victorian and Edwardian news stories, as well as a weekly podcast of stories from authors of the day, such as Dickens, Collins, Benson, and Conan Doyle. Thank you again for watching and listening. This has been News of the Times, and I am Robin Coles.